You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, April 27th, 2011. This is episode 181, April Showers, Teacher Resources. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This one is episode 181, and we are finishing up our series on April Showers. And to help me do that, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. A little under the weather, Sally.
Yeah, you'll have to bear with me today, everyone. I have a scratchy throat. I apologize for that. I think it's the April showers. Actually, our April showers are turning into snow tonight. So
Oh, no.
What a way to close out the month of April.
Oh, well, it's a good thing we brought backup today. We have Gail Potratz with us from New London. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everyone, and it is showering here in New London, too. Very dark and dreary morning following the wonderful, beautiful spring day we had yesterday. So I guess fitting for the show, it's showering here, and we're going to shower people with applications today.
And as you might suspect and guess, it is Teacher Day. Gail is usually joining us for classroom technology-focused chit-chat, and that's the case today, as we're going to kind of bring together the multitude of teacher resources that we've collected over the years and try to make sense of them all, categorize them all, and hopefully point you at some resources that are going to help you in your ministry, whether you be in the classroom or otherwise. I think a lot of these resources are useful in a lot of different ways. And maybe the best place to start is with an interesting, I don't know if I'd call it an infographic.
Well, Bloom's Taxonomy, anyone who went to school and graduated in education certainly learned about the different types of learning, the learning pyramid. Mm-hmm. It's been around for a long time, but I'd say about 10 years ago it was revised. So we're looking at the revised Bloom's Taxonomy, which takes you through the levels of different types of learning, the most basic being remembering, then you move up to understanding, applying knowledge, analyzing knowledge, evaluating. And at the top of the revised Bloom's Taxonomy, we have creating. And this Samantha Penny has taken the revised Bloom's Taxonomy and connected it with different Web 2.0 tools in each of the categories. Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting to look at. For example, Digo, we've talked about the social bookmarking tool before, and you might think about Digo as being just perhaps as a remembering type tool.
Right.
You know, helps you remember sites. But it's actually, when you think of it a little bit more, when kids use Digo or adults use Digo, when they find their sites, they have to go through the site, figure out why they want to remember it, tag it. And even the act of tagging a site is actually dealing with some deeper understanding. And it's an important skill because with all the information out there today, it becomes very important for students to learn how to manage information. Mm-hmm. So while at first glance, Digo might just seem a remembering tool, it certainly is fitting to be used as understanding. And it may even move up higher on the list depending on what you do with it. So I think it's hard to find the exact category to put these tools in, but her attempt to do that just is an attempt to show us that all of these tools that we're talking about today and the ones that we won't get to today as well are there for the purpose of higher thinking skills and trying to move students to be thinking on a higher level rather than just staying on that remembering mm-hmm. and that content level of mm-hmm. education. So kind of a creative way of doing that, I think.
Yeah, the thing I like about it is not graduating with an education degree is it really helps you sort through all the hundreds of tools that are out there that could be used for educational purposes and really kind of segments them in an understandable way, so you can see what the base tools would be and where they fit, and then you can approach the tool thinking this is probably the best use for it, as opposed to trying to figure out its use. This is a helpful diagram to help you figure that out.
And it's not just a flat diagram, it's actually interactive. Mm-hmm. So as you're analyzing the tools that are available to you, you can click any of the logo images for the tool and go directly to their website. So that makes it a very powerful, active image as well.
Right. Now, interestingly enough, you mentioned DIGO, but I don't see DIGO on this chart.
No, I noticed that too, that it isn't on this one. Well, there's a lot of tools out there, and this is just a sampling.
Right, and you can tell there's a little bit of age. Little bit of age on this. I'm not sure when it was created. They still have Delicious on here, which is really not the tool of choice anymore, as that's being phased out. But I think most of them are still around and in great use. And one of the great things about the internet is you can probably find all kinds of blogs and information about how to use each one of these tools in an educational context.
And if Samantha Penny's image wasn't enough for you, there's actually another image, a similar image called Bloomin' Google, which is a Bloom's taxonomy with just Google tools. Mm-hmm. And it was done by somebody named Kathy Schrock. And you'll want to take a look at that one as well. It's not in a triangle format, but it's got those same levels of understanding. And it has all the Google tools mapped out and how you can use them at each of the different levels.
Interesting.
So,
yep.
And again, it's clickable, so you can go to the different tools. There's Google tools on here I've never heard of. Imagine that.
Right. I know. There were a lot of them on there that I didn't know either. I think it's interesting when you look at the top level of the pyramid, the top level of the revised taxonomy is creating. Mm-hmm. And when we've talked about the 21st century skills, collaborating, communicating, and creating, the three C's is the easy way for me to remember those standards. And creation is huge in education today. So creating, of course, would be at the top of the pyramid.
Right. So how do you want to tackle our conversation? I think we probably should put things in some categories. We've created a few of those, as few as possible, actually, because it would just be overwhelming, I think, to go through all this. One interesting thing about our show, and that's understandable, is we provide probably at least two or three teaching resources every show. So it was, I think, kind of a challenge to figure out which ones would kind of rise to the top and which ones we could talk about on the show. So maybe we should start with communication.
That sounds like a great idea, Martin. And one of the key things you want to do as an educator is be able to communicate with your parents and with the students in your classroom. You have lots to communicate. You certainly can showcase the students' work. You can put your assignment sheets out there, calendars for your classroom, contact information. One important thing is just to share links to things, as maybe the students are doing research projects or different projects. So having a classroom website can be a real big tool for your communication efforts. And that's super easy to do with a lot of free platforms that are out there. So maybe you want to start a blog using WordPress or Blogger, or set up a free Google site. And of course, there's also Wiki Spaces. We've talked about that quite a bit on our shows. And they're free for educators as well. So lots of options for setting up a platform for communication. And if it's not just you that wants to communicate, but if your students are ready to communicate, you can do that with student blogging tools. EduBlogs and KidBlog are two examples of that. Maybe you have some examples that you could share from your teaching that you've used for communication.
Well, on the blogging, I would just add WordPress and Blogger. We've used them both successfully with upper grade students as well. There's advantages to all of them with the blog platforms. You really have to look them all over. There's good and bad about both. I haven't found a perfect one yet that does everything I want to do as far as security and ease of use for students. But yeah, blogs definitely, and I guess I would just stress the classroom website. Having a really good classroom website that you keep current and keep content on there all the time, parents will get tuned into the fact that that is the place to go for information. We've done away with most of our printed out Friday notes and that kind of thing, and have really focused people on, you need to go here if you want to know something. And as long as teachers keep up and keep them current, very successful. Can't say enough about the classroom website.
That's probably true for almost any website where you want to keep traffic flowing. You've got to keep it updated. You've got to keep it current. That same goes with a church website, for instance. If the church, you know, the first month that the church calendar is out of date and they can't find what they need, they're going to think twice about returning. Same, I'm assuming, for classroom website. The first time they come and the assignments aren't there, you know, when they're sitting down with their kids trying to verify that they got this all correct,
right,
it's going to cast a little bit of doubt in their mind. They may come back a second time, but a couple times in a row, they're gone. So there really is a discipline involved with this, and you really have to be committed to that.
Right.
So don't start it unless you're going to follow through with it.
And also, don't be afraid to make use of your at least middle and upper grade students.
The kids
put the assignments on the classroom website.
Awesome.
Daily.
That's
one
idea.
Of their jobs. You know, the old erase the board, clean the bubbler. All those jobs. One of them is website assignments.
That's awesome. Do you use Final Web for that, or do you have a blog
yes.
for that? Okay.
Yes.
So
yes,
they have a Final Web account or a login, and they go and do that. That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Very good. Maybe we should move on to our next category, which is record keeping and planning. The teacher's best friend is being able to use technology to their advantage for grading systems, for online learning, for things like rubrics and things of that nature. So a couple of grading systems that we want to make mention of. Recently, we interviewed Ryan Rothschild, and he talked about using Snap Grades at Trinity and Belle Plaine, and that's an emerging online grading system that seems to be really easy to use, easy to set up, and affordable as well. So that's one option there. I know the Synod Lutheran Schools Office has a partnership with PowerSchool, and we have many schools that are making use of PowerSchool as well. And there are others in that space. InGrade, Skyward, and Infinite Campus also are being used across the Synod. So, Gail, do you guys use online grading there?
Yes, we are a PowerSchool user, and we can't say enough about it. We really enjoy it.
Let's move on to PLNs. We've talked a lot about those in the past.
Certainly. A very important component for today's teacher is to have a personal learning network. And, you know, Gail and I both can probably attest to the fact that the reason we're able to share so many resources on the Wells Tech podcast is because of our PLN, our personal learning network, and being able to learn, I think, primarily via Twitter and via blog reading, RSS reading, the many different tools that are available out there. And there's lots of ways to get started with that. There's lots of how-tos and things. One thing that I've done is compiled a list of the educational technology Twitter users that I follow. So if you're brand new to Twitter, you might just want to follow that list and begin reading and corresponding with those ed tech leaders that are out on Twitter and constantly sharing resources.
Yeah, Twitter lists are really powerful and probably underused. So If anybody out there has those kinds of things and wants to share, because that's always helpful to see other people's lists, because just the small gathering of folks here on the podcast don't know all the resources out there. So please,
I think
share
it's
those.
Important to mention that the hashtag Wells Tech. If you're going to get into Twitter and you're looking for people to follow, if you just use the hashtag Wells Tech and start reading those posts, you're going to meet a lot of folks that way.
Yep.
And that's a good start as well. And just a plug to take Twitter seriously. I think when you mention Twitter to people, there's still kind of a thing out there among some people that it's just a frivolous thing with a lot of
time waster.
Just chit chat, just mindless. And yes, it is that, but you don't have to use it that way. You can. It is a very powerful tool for learning.
Yep. The way I use it, and I think both of you kind of do it the same way, is if I find a resource worth sharing, I'll share it on Twitter. So I try and use it as a teaching tool or a sharing tool. So, you know, I'm finding something that I think might have some value, and tweet it out that way versus more of the personal stuff. I think I use it more in a professional way, and I probably consume more Twitter than I send. And that's kind of the cool part about it is there's so much out there that you can turn on and off and tweak, so to speak, as you like, and kind of fine-tune it to get exactly what you need. And it's real easy to do that with Twitter and some of the tools that are available.
Right.
Especially
these
lists. Go ahead.
The second important one that I would stress would be Digo that I started the show talking about because the group functions in there. And again, we do have a Wells Tech Digo group. Several groups. And to me, that is a huge part of my personal learning network, is the sharing and the giving and taking that goes on within that social network. Mm-hmm. And I'm relatively new to that. It took me a long time to get to the social part of 2.0 world. You know, I like the organization and making things easier for myself, but it took me a while to get to the point where I saw the value of the personal learning network and the sharing that goes on in all of the social parts of these sites. But once you do see that, it's phenomenal how much learning you do on a daily basis that way.
Yep.
Another major aspect is just being able to consume a little bit from the great blogs that are out there. And if you're a teacher and you aren't reading Free Technology for Teacher, I highly recommend that you add that to the top of your blog list. It's a teacher in Massachusetts. His name is Richard Byrne, and he's been blogging probably for about 2 or 3 years now. And each day he probably blogs 3 or 4 awesome resources. I don't know if the well is ever going to run dry, but for now, he does a really great job of finding resources. He categorizes them. He tells you applications for the classroom, gives you lots of good ideas to get you started. And they're not long blog posts. It's not a big commitment that you're going to be involved in. And if you have a great RSS reader like Google Reader or maybe Flipboard for the iPad, it's really easy to scan through the titles even of his blog posts and just zero in on the ones that have meaning for you.
To collect all those blogs, I think we would probably be remiss if we didn't talk about Google Reader and some of the RSS aggregating tools that bring all that together. You can even find them that'll bring Twitter feeds in. And Google Reader is the one that I use, and really that's where I find almost all of my content. That I share or that goes into workshops or presentations or that I, you know, give me some idea or reasons to explore new technology. And it just seems to work, and it works on every platform. So whether you're on your laptop or your desktop or your iPad or iPhone or whatever phone, I find it the place I go to if I have a little downtime. So if I'm just relaxing at home or whatever, and I just want to kind of stay up to date, I just grab my phone and I'm reading the news and things that are going to expand, you know, my knowledge of the industry and maybe share with other people. So I think that's one of the most important tools that I have, is the ability to bring all that together.
And for those that may be new to Google Reader and looking for a way to get started, maybe that'll be your summer project, you teachers that are listening. We do have a Wells Tech past episode and a page on the Wells Tech Wiki dedicated to getting started with Google Reader. So check that out.
Very good. Should we move on?
Yeah, we got one big category left, and this is resources for students. This was the hard one to kind of wrap our brains around because there's just so much out there. But what we did was kind of take it and categorize it, make subcategories. And the first one would be research resources. At the top of the list, I put BibleGateway.com because I love to teach my kids about using Bible Gateway to do various Bible research. It's so nice to be able to select the version of the Bible you want to use. And yes, they still have the NIV 1984 available. I think it possibly defaults to the new version, but you can go back to the older version. And then you can search for strings of text, for keywords, and come up with all kinds of different things. I like to have my kids do fact races and just race to see how many times they can find the word light in the Bible or something like that, just to get them comfortable with the interface at BibleGateway.com.
Mm-hmm.
in a similar fashion, you can teach them to do general research using a cool website called Fact Monster or Ask for Kids. And both of those have great interfaces for children. There are many more out there. Gail, I don't know if you have a particular favorite, if you let them use Google or what, but Fact Monster and Ask for Kids are great for elementary students.
They are. We do usually just Google is probably our go-to.
Sure. Sure. The next category that we have is creative, and this is a very long list. I'm sure we can't go over all of these, but you guys will want to check out the show notes to make sure you don't miss any of these cool links. You can let your kids be creative in so many ways, and this applies across your curriculum. So that if they have a social studies project coming up, maybe you want to introduce them to Animoto. Our kids here in Sleepy Eye were just doing some research on Minnesota history, and they used Animoto, which is a video slide share kind of fun slideshow producer, mm-hmm. and produced their own movies about Minnesota history. They had a good time doing that. But there's lots of others out there. Picnic is an online photo editor. Fun photos are available from Big Huge Labs. And I'm just looking through our list. I don't think I have any other photo-specific ones.
Well, Animoto is the premier, I think. I would just add that digital stories, where you're stressing to kids to bring out, use as few words as you can, but use sound and sight, images and sound, and try to create a feeling, a tone, an emotion about a topic. Animoto really, it is so easy. That's, you know, there is some music available right on the site that's already copyright-free music that you can use. It just makes everything a lot easier to pull all the pieces together. So I can't stress enough that Animoto is a go-to for photo.
And we'll include a link in the show notes to free educator accounts. So only it costs $30 a year per student, per seat with Animoto. But you can apply for a free educator account, and they'll give you up to 50 seats for free. It's for a limited period of time, like for 6 months, and then you have to reapply. But it is a very valuable thing that they do for educators there. Another place that has free educator accounts is Glogster. And I've had my kids make Glogster pages before. It basically is just a fun, creative web page image kind of tool. So they can put things on their wall. They can include images, video, sounds, text. And it's kind of like a bulletin board feel.
Right.
Where they can,
I call those kind of things containers.
Yeah.
It's where you put the stuff.
So we've had them do some creative projects with that. And again, this might be at the end of a geography lesson or a science lesson or whatever. This can go across all your curriculum to use these tools and kind of integrate it. There's also comic creation tools like Professor Garfield, where they could make a Garfield cartoon, or Make Beliefs comics, where they can make cartoons. Mm-hmm. And you might have them do that to act out a part of a story that you're reading for literature or something like that. There's even superhero comic creators. So lots of possibilities there. And we could go on and on.
We should probably move along, yes.
Yeah, we better go on.
We'll hit the 2-hour mark here pretty quick.
Just a quick mention for kind of the technology side of things. There's Scratch, where you can teach your kids computer programming. And then there's NetSmarts Kids for internet safety, and Welcome to the Web, which is a great introduction to the internet and to interfacing with your computer on the internet. So we'll have a category there for web programming. And then next up, we wanted to just briefly look at reading, phonics, writing, spelling, that whole area of learning. And Gail, I don't know if you have particular experience with any of these tools.
Most of those things I do not. Spelling City, we're big on Spelling City. I love that. That's I believe $30 a year per teacher. You can also get a school-wide license. But the beautiful thing about Spelling City is now they do have also vocabulary tests. And this is one place where you can actually put your own words in. I'm always looking for that. And they have a bank of words, but a lot of words in our stories aren't in the word bank, but they do let you put your own in, which is really nice. That's one of the key features, I think, of that program. So I'd highly recommend the spelling and vocabulary, Spelling City.
Gail, you
the others I'm not familiar with.
Gail, you recommended one a couple shows ago.
Yes.
A vocabulary tester.
No word, I think it was called.
I had a couple hours of fun with that myself.
Yeah, that is fun. But you can't put your own words in that one.
Yeah, I know.
That's the only bad thing. It's still very good for learning vocabulary.
It is. It really stretches you, and you can put it on the easy version or the hard version. Right. And it was an educational experience. Debbie and I did it together. It was kind of fun.
It is fun.
Another one along those lines is freerice.com, where you have to come up with a definition, and you're giving rice to third world countries or something like that. That's the
name. Right.
So that's a fun one for kids. For our early readers, probably K through 2 level, one website that we really like is Starfall. And a lot of times I'll see our teachers use this with the smart board. So the class is playing together some of these phonics lessons that are part of Starfall. So if you're looking for something for early readers, you might want to check that out. And then another favorite with our students here is Scholastic Story Starter. And this is kind of geared to 4th through 6th grade, where they spin the wheel and come up with a silly start to a story, and then they write it there online. So it's just a good creative writing kind of exercise.
Kind of like Mad Libs kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
You know, speaking of vocabulary, there's another thing that we don't have on the list here, but that I ran across just in looking at things. It comes up quite often, actually. There's so many sites out there that prepare high school kids for SATs or ACTs. And I guess I'm not working with kids on that level, so I don't really pay too much attention to it, but I just notice I run into them all the time. So if you do teach high school and you're not doing that, just Google
those
things, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that you can find things to help kids prepare for those tests in high school.
Yep. Well, we've talked about reading, writing, and the third R.
Got to get some arithmetic
That's
in
correct.
There. That's how they taught me in Mississippi, Martin. I didn't know they did that in California, too. All right. Basic arithmetic, we use 2 more than and 2 less than with our early elementary students, where they can look at a number line and they have a target number where they're trying to find 2 more than that number or 2 less than that number. Really easy and interactive, great for the smart board as well. Then kind of on the science side of things, Fantastic Contraptions is a great kind of physics-oriented game that you can play online. We have links that will include to the periodic table of videos done by the University of Nottingham, where they have a video about each element on the periodic table for those chemistry students out there. Gail, I think you've talked before about the American Math Challenge.
Yes, World Math Day.
Mm-hmm.
World Math Day and World Spelling Day also. First part of March, always. That's a very fun challenge for the kids. Everybody across the world is competing with each other. You get 4 students to compete with from schools all over the world on basic math skills. And the kids get very excited about that. So that's a good one. The periodic table reminded me, too. My very favorite app for the iPad is an app called Elements. It is not free, and it's not 99 cents. Unfortunately, it's $14.99. That's like the most expensive one I've ever bought. But that is very good for any grade level when you're studying the elements. And a lot of times teachers have kids pick which one they want to, which element the kids really want to know more about and that kind of thing. It's very visual. You can spin the object around, and it talks about what objects are made out of that particular element, so they can get a real world example rather than just this thing out there. Really very, very good. And the reason that I now have to buy an iPad too, so that I can project it.
That's right.
We have our priorities.
Yes, we do.
One more mention in math and science category is Tux Math. A free download actually grew from the Linux operating system, a set of open source software, Tux software. There's Tux Paint, Tux Typing. We like Tux Math at our school. It's great for upper elementary. It's just a drill software where math problems are falling from the sky and you get to shoot them down with your laser beams. So real good drill, and it covers everything from just typing numbers to basic addition all the way up through advanced math skills, exponents and fractions and all kinds of things. So you've got the wide gamut of possibilities there with your math drill.
And speaking of typing, that's our next category, and there is a bunch of stuff in there. And this is we're beyond the Mavis typing tutor days, I think.
We're moving into online typing tools, and just want to include a few links. Again, we start them typing pretty young, just doing some basic drills with games like Keyboard Climber and Super Hyper Spider Typer, which are just literally just hunt and peck, kind of looking for the keys and getting familiar with the layout of the keyboard with our little bitty guys. At a middle elementary level, we kind of move up to something like a dance mat typing, which is done by the BBC, really fun, interactive. And then for our upper elementary students, we're using an online typing teacher called, I want to say it's Learn to Type. No, I'm sorry, typingweb.com. And we've been real happy with that. That requires you to set up student accounts, but you can set it up completely free and then have your login where you can look at their skills and things. So been real pleased with that. What do you guys use for typing in New London, Gail?
We use a variety of things at different levels. Our main one is Master Key, which is a Mac from Mac in Mind, a company called Mac in Mind. They make a lot of programming, and actually Jay Litnauer, the owner of that, creator of that, is a Wells person. I just found that out incidentally as I was using their stuff. So interesting. But he's got a lot of nice things out there. We use that. It's not an online. It's we have it on our server. Why we like that one is because of the record keeping. We try to do a lot of record keeping, and then we always send home with the report card, a typing report as well. We are looking at, for the upper grades, moving away from that to, I believe it's called EduTyping online. It is not free either, but again, we're looking for some record keeping. So the last one you mentioned, Sally, with the individual student accounts, is there record keeping associated with that? Do you know?
I haven't printed out record keeping. They definitely have it available, so I have to look at you know, what you can get.
I'm going to check that one out too.
Yeah, typingweb.com.
Right, and the one we're looking at, I believe, is called EduType.
So, are both of you finding that? I would assume as years go forward, The typing skills of the students is getting better and better. They're probably starting younger and younger.
Definitely. They don't even teach typing here at MVL High School. Mm-hmm. You know, we're expected to have gotten them that far at the elementary level now, so they don't even get that kind of instruction at the high school level. And many of my elementary kids can out-type me as far as speed. They're really good.
You still have to, it's the same thing though, you still have to really watch. We find they can type well on the typing program, but they don't always carry that over. You know, you really have to remind them to carry it over into their other typing work that they're doing when they're working with other applications.
And with proper hand position and using the appropriate fingers as opposed to, you know, the two or three finger method, which probably a lot of them are more comfortable with now because of texting, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to be kind of a struggle, really.
Right. So these tools have come in handy for that. Then we have two more categories, and we got to move on. Music, obviously, is a big one in our schools.
Sure, and I don't have a huge number of resources there, but a couple of fun things that we've made use of in Sleepy Eye is one is an online tool for just being creative with music, and I don't know if it even has a, I think it's called Tone Matrix, but basically the students can drag across a grid of squares and it will play music as you highlight or light up the squares on your screen. Mm-hmm. So just a really fun interactive music playground. And then the other one that I have to mention is related to a tool that turns music into a visual animation. And so there's a series of YouTube videos, a whole channel on YouTube called Music Animation Machine, where you can watch these videos and actually visually see the different instrumentation and the highs and lows of the different instrumentations. It's kind of hard to describe until you go and watch it, but it would be an excellent resource for any music classroom to kind of analyze and study how music fits together and how the different instruments and rhythms and things show up visually using this tool.
Nice. I think this is an area where tools like or devices like the iPad are going to really help with this particular subject. There's all kinds of very cool tools right now, educational and otherwise, that are living on the iPad, to including GarageBand with the new iPad 2, which is really an awesome tool. So, and then the last category, quizzes.
The last thing you want to do is be able to ask them if they know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You can do that with a couple of fun tools online. One is Quizlet. We've talked about it in the past. An easy way to make flashcards for your students. And you don't even have to make them yourself. There's a whole slew of resources out there that they can take advantage of to learn different subjects. Things like language drills or math and science drills. There's even ACT and SAT drills out there. So a really great way to just quiz yourself using flashcards. And there are iPod and iPad apps using Quizlet as well. And then also worth mentioning is Jeopardy Labs, where you can create your own online Jeopardy games. And then they're really fun to play on a smart board. So you pick somebody to be your Alex Trebek and turn over the answers and, you know, indicate whether the two teams, you know, which of the teams got it correct or whatever. So both of those are fun drill kind of tools.
I think the showers are coming to an end, and we, over the last 4 weeks, have provided just a ton of resources. First of all, thank you, Sally, for putting all this stuff together. This is it's a labor of love, for sure, and hopefully it's been useful for our listeners.
I think something we can reference back to for quite a while.
Great. So. All right. We probably need to do our picks of the week in lightning round fashion, as we're coming up on the 40-minute mark already for the podcast. So, and some of us have different things to do yet today. So, Gail, you have a pick this week?
Yes, I chose something that isn't a 2.0 app, just because we've heard a lot about them today. So I veered away from that. I've been always wanting to mention several months ago, or even more than that, I purchased a voice recognition software package from Nuance. The name of it for the Mac, which I use it on, is called Dragon Dictate. And I just think it is great. I've tried several other voice recognition softwares in the past and quit using them, was not impressed, didn't want to take the time to make it usable. The good thing about this is I only had to train it by reading two paragraphs, and it is just phenomenal how many words it knows. It hardly ever misses a word that I dictate into it. So it also does commands. You could tell it to open your email, open message, whatever. I have not used it that way. I just purely at this point have used it for typing. Mm-hmm. But cannot say enough about it. It's very reliable. It was about $167, so it isn't free software, but right. Worth every penny to me.
Maybe those typing skills aren't as important as we thought they were.
Well, my typing skills need help.
Okay, so that's a great tool. And I've used this in the past, too. It does. I can vouch for that. It really does a nice job of speech recognition. They've got some good technology there. Sally, your pick.
My pick is a website that was recently introduced by my friends at Google. It's called googleaday.com, and it is basically a search site where you're given a challenging question and encouraged to use Google to find the answer. For instance, today's question is, if a man has two swallows tattooed to his chest, how many inches has he sailed? Now, I have no clue what that's talking about, but somehow through searching in Google, I should be able to search two swallows tattooed and find out how that relates to maritime sailing inches. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Should be interesting to do the research. The answer's right there, so just one click away if you want to actually see the answer. And they're putting out a new one each day. And one of the fun things that they do is they kind of capture a version of Google before all the searching starts, so that you aren't influenced by the searches that other people are doing on this particular question of the day. Because Google obviously changes their search results based on the popularity of searching. And so they don't want, you know, the Google search to be influenced by all the people and what they're searching on. I hope that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you're looking for maybe a fun thing to do as a starter for a classroom, have them do some searching using a Google a day. Or if you just enjoy puzzles and challenges and doing research on the internet, here it is for you. And you can go back and look at previous puzzles very easily with a little slider bar at the bottom. So check out googleaday.com.
Great. My pick is a hardware pick, and we've upgraded our podcasting equipment a little bit here on the Wells Tech Podcast, and we're now using a Apple MacBook Air. So that would be my pick of the week. I also, it does double duty as a presentation device and the iPhone programming that I'm doing as well. Apple, for some strange reason, requires you to use Apple hardware to actually do any programming for the iPhone. So this was one of those tools that was necessary. So I guess I'd have to say I'm really impressed with the product. I have the 13-inch, 1.86 gigahertz, 128 gig solid-state drive, 2 gigabyte of RAM version. I get a battery life. One of the neat things about this is because it's got a solid-state drive, which makes it really quick, but it also it allows you to have maybe 8 hours of untethered battery life, which is better than any PC laptop that I've ever had. Couple negatives: doesn't have any DVD, so it's really skinny, and that's one of the things they pitched. You can buy a little external one that hooks up to the USB drive, USB port. It also doesn't have any Ethernet port. It's all wireless, although you can buy, again, another dongle that allow you to have Ethernet through the USB. I thought when I first got it that it would be a little bit underpowered, but it handles everything that I needed to do really well. It will run parallel, so if you need to run a PC application of some sort, you can do that in a virtual environment, and I think the performance is perfectly acceptable. Just a nice little device, good travel companion, and I think it will be a nice addition here to the podcast.
Gone are the days of loading up your boat anchor in your computer bag to take on
it. Yeah, and my shoulder feels a lot better on the road now, too.
I bet. So. I bet.
It's about a third of the weight of my Dell.
Sure.
So, all right, let's move on to our community feedback, Sally.
Yeah, this week we heard from our contest winners, Steve and Rachel. Last week we gave away a couple of copies of the Glow Bible. And Martin, you want to share what Steve had to say to you?
I would if I could bring this up. Hang on just a minute.
Oh,
yeah,
I'll
he
start
said,
with,
I got ahead. It here. Thanks, Martin. I'm just thrilled to win a copy of Glow Bible Premium. I've been playing with the light version and was getting to the point of convincing myself to get the premium upgrade during their Easter special. So this is very timely. You'll get a kick out of the response I got from Pastor Kratz here at St. John's when I told him I got a Glow Bible. He said, I have no idea what you're talking about, except that you got some kind of flashlight that lets you read the Bible in the dark.
There you go.
So I guess I have some educating to do. He'd like it, but I think our staff minister will appreciate it most for youth Bible ministry. So that's a great response, and I'm glad we can do that. So happy Glow Bibling, Steve.
There you go. And I also heard from Rachel Arnold, who won the copy from my blog, and she said, I was so excited to hear my name read on the podcast. Although I think my husband, who's Pastor Phil Arnold, is just as excited as I am, if not more, for actually exploring GLOW. So she's very excited. She also thanked me for the tip of ordering the DVDs for the local storage.
Yeah, Steve did as well. So that is a great tip.
Very good. We'll be anxious to hear how it makes a difference in your ministry, Steve and Rachel. We hope it's a blessing to you. Next up, we heard from Pastor Jeremiah Gum, who's out in New York, and he's a reader of the Church Marketing Sucks blog, Martin. That's one that you've recommended in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they are currently running a series called Church Websites 101.
Right, I've seen that.
And great series. He wanted to point out to us they've already blogged about planning the site, your call to action, knowing your audience, knowing yourself. Don't reinvent the wheel. Lots of good articles that are going into this Church Websites 101 series.
Yep.
So we'll make sure and include a link to that in the show notes. And we really appreciate you sharing that, Pastor Gum.
We should move on to our DIGO section of community feedback. And we did hear from two people other than the two of us, Sally.
That's always nice.
Yep.
We have a Wells Tech group. And there, Ryan Rosenthal shared an interesting article, Top 5 Ways Teens Are Getting Into Trouble Online and What You Can Do. So any of us are connected to teens, potentially as teachers or as parents or as youth ministers or pastors of teens, this will be a great article for you to peruse and learn about some of the challenges that teens are facing.
Yep.
And then we heard from Jason Schmidt out in Omaha, Nebraska. He shared a couple of links from the National Educators Association. He shared 10 free things for April, and they've got an exhaustive list of free things in different categories, language arts, sciences, health, etc. So check that out. Looks like a great list, and I'm sure probably none of the things that we mentioned this morning on our shower of teacher resources is on that list, so there's a whole new shower for you to delve into.
Right.
And then Jason also sent us a link to The Front Gate, which I had read a couple of things that he said. It's basically a reading place, kiddie lit kind of thing, so you can explore the rusty key at the front gate and find out more about kiddie lit. I haven't done a lot of delving into this yet. So.
Okay. Thank you, Jason and Ryan.
Yes. Let's see. And just a couple of mentions from you and I, Martin. The Backwards Class is an article that I tagged on DIGO. Interesting article about a teacher who's actually pre-recording her lectures for an AP Calc class so that her students are actually learning in advance their main lesson material, and their classroom time can be more dedicated to working through examples and answering questions and things. And I also want to include a link to a TED video by, I think it's Solomon Khan, who does the Khan Academy, and his whole concept around this backwards class or flipping the class. Interesting concept, especially for more advanced students, being able to do their studies online and then come to class prepared with questions and things like that.
Interesting. Yeah, and I found a bunch of stuff this week. I don't have time. We don't have time to share it all, but one of the things that got the most chatter on Twitter and Facebook was a infographic that I ran across outlining the differences based on a fairly extensive survey between Mac users and PC users. And if you haven't seen this, take a look, because most of the people that responded felt that it was pretty accurate. You know, the political leanings and how people feel about technology and new things and how conservative or liberal they might be, where they might live even, based on whether they own a Mac or a PC, urban versus rural. Gail, did you see that infographic?
I did. I left you a message.
Oh, that's right. You did.
And said, well, I'm glad to hear that New London must be a big city.
That's some Mac users there. I think it.
That's right. I guess the surveys aren't always as accurate, maybe. As you
no, but it was very interesting. I enjoyed it.
They did a nice job, yeah. A couple other things. Google Docs now allows people to upload file folders, not just files, which is a real help for people who store a lot of stuff on Google Docs. So that just was released. Google also is thinking, and this is a rumor, I'm not sure if it's substantiated yet, but Google is going to offer their Chrome notebook via subscription platform. So that might be interesting. Remember, Google Chrome notebooks were those basically netbooks. They're regular laptops, but they just run the Chrome operating system. So you, in order to use them, you have to be connected to the internet. That might be a solution that schools might want to consider if those ever become a reality, and you've got connectivity there in the classroom, because the subscription price seemed pretty reasonable. They were talking about $10 or $20 a month. For a notebook, and over the life of one, then you get a new one at a certain point. So it's maybe a solution that might work in some classroom scenarios.
So subscription means rental?
Yep. So you're renting a laptop, exactly. So you,
interesting.
You pay Google $10, they send you a laptop, you use it, and then you pay them another $10 and you use it for another month, and you keep going that way, and then at some point they replace it, and you just keep going. So interesting concept. So, well, that should about do it. I will be headed off to New Ulm here in a couple days for a staff ministry conference, and that'll kind of be the topic of our next show. We're going to talk a little bit about my keynote address there, finding the intersection of technology and ministry. Hopefully get some sound bites, and Sally, you're going to also be there as well.
Yeah, I'm going to make that long trip to New Ulm too, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm doing a breakout on making the most of your website. Looking forward to it.
So we'll share some of that stuff. Gail, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
All righty. And let's close the show with the music of Koine from their album Koine 2, Behold a Host Arrayed in White. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Arrayed in white, like thousand snow-clad mountains bright, with palms they stand. Who is this band before the throne of light? These are the saints of glorious fame, who from the great affliction came, and in the flood of Jesus' blood are cleansed from guilt and blame. Now gathered in the holy place, their voices they sojourned here, but now how glorious they appear. Those martyrs stand, a priestly band, God's throne forever near. So oft in troubled days gone by, in anguish they would weep and sigh, at home above the God of love, for ere their tears shall dry, they now enjoy the Sabbath rest, the heaven. blessed legions resting there, you now are safe and blessed forever. So praise the Lord, who with his word sustained you on the way. You did the joys of earth.